All right, Tim, alcoholic. Welcome to step 8. Very short read tonight, so fortunately we do have some pertinent data in the 12 and 12, which will fill a little bit of our time, but it will also give us a lot of time to talk about the 8th step or any other step we want to talk about. So that being said, we are in the big book, page 76. We are going to be reading from the 3rd paragraph, first 6 lines only. 3rd paragraph, first 6 lines only. In addition to that, just for later, we are going to be reading out of the 12 and 12, step 8, obviously, and that's page 77 to 82. On everybody's seat is an amends list, which I believe covers the full 8th step and starts us on the process of the 9th step. And I'll show you how that sort of works out. And it would probably be a good idea, if you want to bring the list back next week just so we can discuss column 3. Okay, here we go. In the big book, page 76, 3rd paragraph. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. So all of our preceding steps have had elements of faith. It's a discussion. It is a decision. It is a philosophical conclusion that we've come to. But they've also had some action to them. So anytime we've done a prayer, anytime we've admitted, anytime we've, come to believe, there's an element of action in there, but primarily I would say our real action steps up to this point have been 4 and 5, right? You hand somebody the 4th step and their eyes cross. It's like, oh boy, we're not going to be talking anymore. I have to go home and write these things out. That's action, right? That's where we lose most people. And then 5, and then get them to finish it so that they do 5 is a whole nother story. But those are definitely action. I think 6 and 7 are more faith-based. We're going to be asking God to do something for us. We've recognized what our situation is, and we're asking God to help us in this venture. But now what it's saying is we need more action. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. Here's step 8 in the big book. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. So there are 2 steps to the step. One is we need to write down all the names of people we have harmed. And then the second part of that is to make sure we're willing to make the amends. 2 separate things, and we're going to see how we're going to deal with that. So then the big book tells us, we made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now our reading stops tonight for step 8 right there, because the next word says now. We're going to talk about the 9th step. But for our purposes tonight, the 8th step is only the list. Plus column 2 on this sheet that I'm giving you. So, column 1, I owe an amends to. Where am I going to get these names from?
Fourth step.
Every single name you have on your 4th step. Resentment, fears, and harms. I used to think it was only harms. But if I have to amend my behavior, amend my past actions, it means to change. If I have fear, it colors the way I interact with that person or institution. It changes how I interact with them. And if I want to amend that relationship, that behavior, it requires me to put the name down. Because we want to make sure, column 2, we want to make sure that we're willing to amend the behavior. So if it's sex conduct, if it's I've stolen, I've stolen time. I clock out at, I have a buddy clock me out at, a buddy that clocks me out at 8 p.m. and I really left at 5, right? We're stealing time. I want to amend that, right? Are we willing to? So in that column, column two, you could put Y for yes or N for no, or write in yes or no, or check for I'm willing, whatever, however you want to use that column. When somebody has done this, I've taken somebody through the steps and they come back with the list, I really scan through column two just to see where they're not willing. That's where I'm putting my attention, right? I'm not dealing with this whole thing. We're, you know, we can slowly work on this thing. But I'm looking for where it's, no, I'm not willing, not Joey. I'm interested in that one. So first column, I'm going to take all the names from my fourth step, and I'm going to put them on here. Second phase of step eight is to decide if I'm willing to make the amends. An amend can be an apology and or a change of behavior. So if I've stolen from petty cash at work and I go to the boss and I apologize for it, and I make an amends of the $600 that I owe them, and I give it to them, or I cut some kind of deal on it, right? And then I don't do it anymore, that's a true ninth step, right? I'm humbly sorry for the shenanigans I pulled. I'm offering your $600 back. Oh, you only want $300? Thank you. I love it. I will pay you, you know, $50 a month until it's paid off. And you don't do it anymore. That's a ninth step. That is, in the big book, it deals with that. That is a risk you must be willing to take. Yeah, it's a risk you must be willing to take. Generally, could there be examples where we would need good advice from a sponsor, a sober network, and or an attorney? Absolutely. It does not mean that we put ourselves in a position that would mean that my kid does not get enough money for tuition next month, right? Or food. That's a better example. But you don't want to save yourself in the process of doing these steps with a glaring likelihood that you're going to harm another.
If you gave back the $600, but you didn't say anything, just sake of argument, is that considered an amends?
I believe it could be under certain circumstances. I believe I could see some scenarios you paint where that would suffice. Yeah, I could see that. But I don't want to go there too quickly. I rather us, the person I'm working with on this, is to marinate on that before we decide that that's the answer. The first answer may be, okay, stop stealing. Yeah, okay, I got 60 days under my belt. I haven't stole from petty cash. Okay, we're on a roll now. That might prove to me that the anonymous, get your $600 back, might be an option. But it also can't be that I'm not going to stand up for right and true. Because honesty is an ingredient. Why did Dr. Bob not get sober when he was working within the Oxford group, basically with the same information, except the twofold disease, basically with the same information, why did he not get sober? Dishonesty. He could never say to the group, I have a problem with booze. He had fear that as a physician that I would be looked down upon, and that some, you know, that's probably self-delusion, but my business would be affected. The honesty part is what kept him from becoming open to the spirit coming in and solving the problem. Finding the power couldn't happen because he wasn't honest. So you have to be careful there. But, you know, could I write a letter? Yes, but hold on. Are we really just fearful of face-to-face? And we would talk about that. You know what I mean? And I think you could be stages. See, now we're actually already in 9. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the problems with 8 and 9. A, they slam them together here. And the 12 and 12, they're going to slam them together. Step 8 is only making the list. You don't have to do a thing. It's only column 1 and column 2. Who do I owe an amends to, and am I willing? You are? Okay, you did 8. Next week we'll probably, you know, delve into it a little bit more. But I think you need to be careful about taking at points where you don't need to take a shortcut, that you take a shortcut. But I wanted to say, this is how I lost my train of thought. This is what I wanted to say. I think 9 steps can be done in phases. A letter could start the process. I see them for the holidays and I say something light, you know, like I don't directly confront the situation. A year later, I see them at a wedding and, you know, they're, you know, very jovial. And maybe that's the, you know, intuitively know. When we're halfway through 9, we intuitively know what the right answer is. So you won't need somebody to tell you. Just, no, I got it. That's kind of the idea. Okay? Yeah.
So I think to help with just the thought of how to approach 8 with circumstances like that that could be very questionable, don't even think about how you're going to go about
9.
Just think, if I had some part in it and I have caused some harm, put it down.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the ramifications may be.
So slick.
Because for me, if I don't get honest and put it down, you know, I may not know how to handle it. And I may have to go to all those people and question whether it's going to harm somebody else or have a further trickle down effect.
Mm-hmm.
I at least need to get it down on
paper.
But regardless of what the next step is going to be.
And
that's a good way to look at
it. That is really the answer to this thing, because everybody fears 9. They're already in 9. We just did it just now. It just happened to me. I'm in 9. We're here for 8. And the fact of the matter is, 8 is done. 8 is partially done. You did it in 4. But what's implied in 4, everybody you've harmed is on 4. What's implied in 4 is that you're willing to change your behavior and fix past wrongs. So the second part of 8 is column 2 here. We want a triple check, because you will get people that did 4, that had a great conversation in 5 regarding this harm that they perpetrated, and then they get here and they say, yeah, I'm not really ready to give that up. Well, we got to highlight that. In fact, that's the place where I put my attention, me as the sponsor.
There's another suggestion. If you don't know affirmatively yes or no, how about a question mark?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Until further investigation.
Yeah.
For now, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I could, like we do for step 6, pray for the willingness.
Yep. Great.
To make the amends.
That's great.
Approach it the same way.
I think that's a perfect
way,
point.
I know for myself, at least I was willing to put the name down on the postcard.
Yes. 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 And willing even to deal with column 2 in yes, no, maybe. Now, I didn't stick maybe in there because I couldn't reconcile it. I've seen that as an option. And just because I'm going strict here, I've done it where yes, no, maybe. But it doesn't give me that choice here. Right? So are we willing? So that, to me, that yes or no. But I think that's a great idea. And it also, for somebody that's a little on the fence, that might be a little bit of an out that gives them, you know, the half step to the next position. Okay, let's leave that alone for a moment. Let's switch over to the 12 and 12, if you don't mind. And again, next week we'll deal with column 3 on this sheet. So again, please bring it back. We are on page 77 in the 12 and 12. It reminds us what the step is. made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So the "and became willing" is column two. So if it's no at the moment, you're going to pray and also practice on some of your other easier amends could give you traction to be able to do it. Or I should say, could give you traction to become willing to do it. You may decide later on with therapy or your sober network or your sponsor that it's not appropriate to make the amends. Seen it. Seen it lots of times. And it's not a cop-out. And that's why I asked to bring this back. You'll see some verbiage on column three, which deals with that very question. Okay. Here we go. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we had been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. And third, having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. So this is a big ticket item. This is saying not only are we going to deal with this on the people that we had harmed, we had them in four, we put them on eight, we started the amends on nine, it's saying it's going to completely change our outlook, and we may develop, the last line of that paragraph, we may develop, this is the purpose, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. That's a psychic change, right? They say, yeah, you come into the program and you change everything. Nothing's the same. You're doing a 180. It's completely different. This is a very large order. It is a task which we may perform with increasing skill, but never really finish. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. Every AA has found that he can make little headway in this new adventure of living until he first backtracks and really makes an accurate and unsparing survey of the human wreckage he has left in his wake. To a degree, he has already done this when taking moral inventory, step four. But now the time has come when he ought to redouble his efforts to see how many people he has hurt and in what ways. So one of the things we can see from this is, you know what? I act a little abrupt to the cleaners today. They didn't have my jacket ready, so I bit the guy's head off. Well, he's not on my amends list, right? This is a new thing that's happening. But it's a great prompter for me to realize that all of my relationships need to be re-looked at. New efforts, new pair of glasses. This reopening of emotional wounds, some old, some perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering, will at first look like purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. So what that's telling me is that even after we've done our fourth step, we're in 8 and 9, we may come up with names that we didn't know. We forgot, you know. So this is the place we would deal with those. We'd immediately get those names on the list. So this may reopen the memory banks. But if a willing start is made, then the great advantages of doing this will so quickly reveal themselves that the pain will be lessened as one obstacle after another melts away. So it's saying you start with your easier ones, you get some confidence, you get some good feeling out of it. You say, wow, this is almost like, this is like medicine. I want more of this. That's the idea. So the pain to do it melts away. However, watch what it does right now. These obstacles, however, are very real, meaning tangible. At the first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness. The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. To escape looking at the wrongs we have done another, we resentfully focus on the wrong he has done us. Does this sound familiar to anybody? This is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at all. Triumphantly, we seize upon his misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting our own. So you saw that line, this is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at all. In other words, there is a possibility you have a resentment the person did nothing wrong. There is a possibility of that. So it's like delusional. However, the person in reality may have done something wrong. So it's even easier if to have a resentment against that person. You know, they really did steal my car, you know, and smash it up and denied it. Yeah, they really may have done that. So it's easier for us to only focus on their stuff then. Right here, we need to fetch ourselves up sharply. It doesn't make much sense when a real tosspot calls a kettle black. A tosspot is a habitual drinker, old expression. Let's remember that alcoholics are not the only ones who bedeviled by sick emotions, right? It says that in the big book. Basically, we need to treat everybody as sick. We're sick, they're sick, everybody's sick. And that's humility, and that's, you know, empathy, and that's forgiveness. It all comes under that rubric. Moreover, it is usually a fact that our behavior when drinking has aggravated the defects of others. We've repeatedly strained the patience of our best friends to a snapping point and have brought out the very worst in those who didn't think much of us to begin with. In many instances, we are really dealing with fellow sufferers. Here, it says it right there, right? People whose woes we have increased. So if everybody's a sufferer in the world, everybody's suffering, there are some that we've made their suffering worse. And I would, if I would kind of like just to be able to use as few words as possible, it's probably because of our selfish, self-centered behavior. Self-centered fear, selfish behavior is what's contributed to other people's suffering. If we are now about to ask forgiveness for others, why shouldn't we start out by forgiving them, one and all? When listing the people we have harmed, most of us hit another solid obstacle. We got a pretty severe shock when we realized that we were preparing to make a face-to-face admission of our wretched conduct to those we had hurt. It had been embarrassing enough when, in confidence, we admitted these things to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. But the prospect of actually visiting or even writing the people concerned now overwhelmed us, especially when we remembered in what poor favor we stood with most of them. There are cases, too, where we had damaged others who were still happily unaware of being hurt. So there could be names on our list that have no idea of what's going on, right? Why, we cried, shouldn't bygones be bygones? Why do we have to think of these people at all? Meaning they don't know they don't know we've screwed them. These were some of the ways in which fear conspired with pride to hinder our making a list of all the people we had harmed. So we've already rationalized that Tommy doesn't know I stole his wallet. So let's just leave it alone. Sleeping dog lie. Says right here that is due to fear and or pride that has conspired us of making a list of all the people we had harmed. Some of us, though, tripped over a very different snag. We clung to the claim that when drinking, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. Our families didn't suffer because we always paid the bills and seldom drank at home. Our business associates didn't suffer because we were usually on the job. Our reputations hadn't suffered because we were certain few knew of our drinking. Those who did would sometimes assure us that, after all, a lively bender was only a good man's fault. What real harm, therefore, had we done? No more, surely, than we could easily mend with a few casual apologies. In other words, saying, no real harm's done. So, you know what? At best, all I have to make is a quick apology, and we're good. Right? It's saying, be careful. That's a snag. First line of that paragraph. That's a snag. That's rationalizing from doing a really good job at this thing, right? Because we know half measures avail us nothing. This attitude, of course, is the end result of purposeful forgetting. It is an attitude which can only be changed by a deep and honest search of our motives and actions. Though in some cases we cannot make restitution at all. This kind of goes to what we were talking about before, right? Though in some cases we cannot make restitution at all. And in some cases action ought to be deferred. We should nevertheless make an accurate and really exhaustive survey of our past life as it has affected other people. That means step 8. That means your list should include everything, and a very honest self-appraisal, non-delusional appraisal, non-rationalizing appraisal. That list should be complete. We can figure out what we're going to do with it later. In many instances, we shall find that though the harm done others has been great, the emotional harm we have done ourselves, In many instances, we shall find that though the harm done others has not been great, the emotional harm we have done ourselves has. Very deep, sometimes quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts persist below the level of consciousness. So the book is telling us here, written in 1953, right? These are essays about the step. Bill wrote this, right? They're telling us that some of this stuff is going to be in our subconscious. So we're working on our subconscious because the process brings them to consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they may actually have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. While the purpose of making restitution to others is paramount, it is equally necessary that we extricate from an examination of our personal relations every bit of information about ourselves and our fundamental difficulties that we can. So those are two goals of this. We're getting a lot of information about ourselves and finding out the fundamental difficulties in our personality. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. So I read that sentence as saying selfishness, self-centeredness is at the root cause of every single woe in our life, including our alcoholism. Because early, before we were true alcoholics, real alcoholics, there were signs that we ignored, purposefully ignored, and kept on our selfish path, which then led to a real alcoholic, real alcoholism. Calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations can deepen our insight. We can go far beyond those things which were superficially wrong with us to see those flaws which were basic. I think the flaws which are basic is that selfish, self-centered thing that I keep hammering home. Self-centered fear. That's the basic. All the superficial thing. You know, I'm a thief, I'm a liar, I'm a cheat. Yeah, we can talk about those things. In fact, that's probably, you know, good fodder. But I always want to strip the onion back a little further. It's going to be selfish, self-centered behavior. A false ego. Right? The purpose of the program is to smash ego, which is the fuel for selfish behavior. I have to read that again. We can go far beyond those things which were superficially wrong with us to see those flaws which were basic, flaws which sometimes were responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. That was one of the benefits of step four for me. I saw patterns, you know, over in column five or column four, depending on the sheet. They were all the same. My driving force was always the same. Thoroughness, we have found, will pay and pay handsomely. We might next ask ourselves what we mean when we say that we have harmed other people. What kinds of harm do people do one another anyway? To define the word harm in a practical way, we might call it the result of instincts in collision. Those are our natural instincts, which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. If our tempers are constantly bad, we arouse anger in others. If we lie or cheat, we deprive others not only of their worldly goods, but of their emotional security and peace of mind. We really issue them an invitation to become contemptuous and vengeful. So look what the domino effect of our behavior is. We do these selfish, self-centered things, and it elicits in other people contemptuous and vengeful behavior. Boy, what are we spitting out into the world? What's our legacy, you know? I'm always biting my kid's head off, you know, picking on every, I think it actually comes up to something about that later, so I won't go there, but, I'm always doing this one angry behavior. Well, that is causing in the other person to not be their best. So I'm harming them. They're not living in a spiritual truth when I'm standing around. I'm bringing out their worst, not their best. If our sex conduct is selfish, we may excite jealousy, misery, and a strong desire to retaliate in kind. Such gross misbehavior is not by any means a full catalog of the harms we do. Let us think of some of the subtler ones, which can sometimes be quite as damaging. And I'll even go so far as to say harder to fix. Right? The subtler ones, you can rationalize them easier. Suppose that in our family lives we happen to be miserly, irresponsible, callous, or cold. Suppose that we are irritable, critical, impatient, and humorless. Suppose we lavish attention upon one member of the family and neglect the others. What happens when we try to dominate the whole family, either by a rule of iron or by a constant outpouring of minute directions for just how their lives should be lived from hour to hour? That's a business term called micromanaging, right? What happens when we wallow in depression, self-pity, oozing from every pore, and inflict that upon those about us? Such a roster of harms done others, the kind that make daily living with us as practicing alcoholics difficult and often unbearable, could be extended almost indefinitely. When we take such personality traits as these into shop, office, and the society of our fellows, they can do damage almost as extensive as that we have caused at home. Having carefully surveyed this whole area of human relations, and having decided exactly what personality traits in us injured and disturbed others, we can now commence to ransack memory. In other words, we're going to go back through our memory banks for the people to whom we have given offense. To put a finger on the nearby and most deeply damaged ones shouldn't be hard to do. Then, as year by year we walk back through our lives as far as memory will reach, we shall be bound to construct a long list of people who have, to some extent or other, been affected. We should, of course, ponder and weigh each instance carefully. We shall want to hold ourselves to the course of admitting the things we have done, italicized, we have done. Meanwhile, forgiving the wrongs done us, real or fancied, real or imagined. We should avoid extreme judgments, both of ourselves and of others. We must not exaggerate our defects or theirs. A quiet, objective view will be our steadfast aim. Whenever our pencil falters, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what AA experience in this step has meant to others. It is the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and from God. We'll stop there tonight, and we'll get a great opportunity to do some sharing.